Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook,
Welcome to Current Events, Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have a great show in store for you today. So I'd like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jimmy and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap. We continue the discussion around Trayvon Martin. We also look at judges. All right, another reason to vote for President Obama. Also joining me today in the second half of the show is none other than hip-hop recording artist Larry Locke Henderson. Locke is the hip-hop educator featured on CBS Radio, London Bang Radio, and other national media outlets. His new album, Lesson One, Hip Hop and Education, is now available on iTunes and Amazon. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading tweets live on the air. I also have a chat room open. Now, out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bed, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Before we get started, I'd like to say something that I just been reported. CBS News legend Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes died last night. In a report by CBSNews.com, they said that he was 93 and passed peacefully, surrounded by family members of Waverly Care Center in New Canaan, Connecticut, where he spent the past few years. He also had a home in Manhattan. It is with tremendous sadness that we mark the passing of Mike Wallace. His extraordinary contribution as a broadcaster is immeasurable, and he has been a force within the television industry throughout its existence. His loss will be felt by all of us at CBS, said Leslie Moons, president and CEO of CBS Corporation. All of us at CBS News, and particularly at 60 Minutes, owe so much to Mike. Without him and his iconic style, there probably wouldn't be a 60 Minutes. There simply hasn't been another broadcast journalist with that much talent. It almost didn't matter what stories he was covering, you just wanted to hear what he would ask next. Around CBS, he was the same infectious, funny, and ferocious person as he was on TV. We loved him and we'll miss him very much, said Jeff Fager, chairman of CBS News and executive producer of 60 Minutes. Again, he will be dearly missed. He was an icon, a legend in this industry. So, again, Mike Wallace, our prayers go out to your family, and we wish them well. Next up, Trayvon Martin. Now, I want to continue the conversation with respect to Trayvon Martin. Last week, we talked about the similarities between the Montgomery Boys boycott and the Trayvon Martin case. Recall that we talked a little bit about the similarities being that the tenacity that they had towards staying till they were able to receive some results. And so many people by now thought this Trayvon Martin case would have died out. People would have got bored. And in fact, last week I talked about how I was getting fatigued until Jima and I made the connection to the Montgomery Boys boycott, and I had to get within myself or find within myself the strength to continue this conversation. Because we should not stop until some type of justice has prevailed. And recall that we also talked about there are some differences between the Montgomery Boys boycott and the Trayvon Martin case, namely the financial component. The reason why the boycott was so successful because they were able to stage a financial boycott as well. And we talked about last week that there was no direct link to a monetary or financial component which could perhaps delay justice or delay some type of satisfactory response to this case because there's no money tied to it. Well, I'm happy to say today we found the link. We found the link in a chain of dollars that could potentially spark some movement in this area. Now, according to a report in the Huffington Post, American Legislative Exchange Council, also known as ELEC, is an ultra-conservative lobby. They lost two major funders. Now, report says that succumbing to pressures from public interest groups, Coca-Cola and PepsiCo have severed their ties to ELEC. Now, that this group has pushed so-called stand your ground legislation and voter identification bills through state legislators across the country. So public interest groups, including colorofchange.org and Campus Progress, have long been trying to break up the powerful alliance between corporations mining their financial interests and conservative activists pursuing a right-wing social agenda. Now, the shooting of an unarmed teenager, Trayvon Martin, whose assailant has to date avoided charges due in part of Florida's Stand Your Ground law, has brought new attention to the controversial law and the seminal role that ELEC, which is corporate funded, played in getting such bills passed. Now, consumer-facing corporations are, of course, the most susceptible to public pressure. Other familiar brands still on ELEC's private enterprise board includes Walmart, State Farm, and AT&T. Let me say that one more time. Walmart, State Farm, and AT&T. Now, Coke spokeswoman Deanna Garza said in a statement Wednesday that the Coca-Cola company has elected to discontinue its membership with ELEC. Our involvement with ELEC was focused on efforts to oppose discriminatory food and beverage taxes, not on issues that have no direct bearing on our business. Now, the report goes on to say, we have a long-standing policy of only taking positions on issues that impact our company and industry. Now, Pepsi quietly dropped its ELEC membership several months ago. Rashad Robinson, which is the executive director of the online civil rights group Color of Change, said his group has been in contact with several major corporations, including Coke, Pepsi, to make them more aware of what ELEC was doing with their money. The organization's previous conversations have been primarily about ELEC's attempt to suppress minority voting through voter identification laws. And they have expanded recently to include the Martin shooting in Stand Your Ground. Now, I see this as good news, of course. It is truly about time for African Americans to understand that issues are not just black and white. They're black, white, and green. Green in the context of dollars. Now, although there's a lot of atrocities that has been imposed on African Americans since this country was founded, it seems to me that African Americans are now waking up to the fact that green trumps black. Green trumps white. So it's about time for them to start having a marking influence on organizations like that are totally against their cause. And so therefore they can choose or not to choose to funnel their money in certain directions. So I applaud their efforts, and I think it is good that they are starting to wake up and starting to realize that there is a lot more to what's going on in our society besides racial issues. I think the economic issues have more weight. Also on the Trayvon Martin front, there was a video that was posted about a week ago entitled, "I Am Not Trayvon Martin." Of course, this sparked a lot of controversy. And I want to play for you a snippet of what this young lady said. Now, of course, this was a Caucasian American, and she had some comments that you might find startling to some respects. So take a listen, and I want you to pay close attention to her words and the language she used in her description as she says, "I am not Trayvon Martin." Take a listen.
"I am not Trayvon Martin. I am not Troy Davis. And to the middle-class, white, socially concerned activist who wears a shirt emblazoned with those slogans, you are wrong. I know you wear that shirt to stand in solidarity with Trayvon, Troy, and other victims of injustice. The purpose of those shirts is to humanize these victims of our society by likening them to the middle-class, white activist wearing it. And once we've humanized the victims, this proves to us the arbitrariness of their deaths and thereby the injustice at play. But the fact of the matter is that these men's deaths are anything but arbitrary. The fact that the real Troy Davis and Trayvon Martin and countless other victims of oppression are buried under 6 feet of cold dirt while we middle-class white activists are alive, marching, and wearing their names is an indication that our societal system is working exactly as it's intended. A more accurate t-shirt to display on my white body would be, 'I am George Zimmerman.' Zimmerman and I were indoctrinated in the same American discourse where we learned that the other, particularly black men like Trayvon and Troy, were less human and were to be feared. Society taught me that as a little white girl, I must preserve my purity and goodness, and that the presence of young single males threatened that. Society taught me that being in the presence of a black man compounds that threat exponentially. I have been taught that male, black bodies are an immediate threat to my safety and the well-being of society as a whole."
Okay, so basically she was just saying that she is not Trayvon Martin. She is more or less like George Zimmerman. So I wonder what you think about that. 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my
Cook Enterprises has joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, join me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay. So before the break, I was talking about the Trayvon Martin case, specifically continuing the conversation, mainly because last week, you know, I told you I was a little fatigued about, you know, all of the Trayvon Martin coverage. It was on the internet. It was on the radio. It was on the television. It was in the newspaper. It was in the magazines. So it seems like to me the whole media circuit was saturated with the Trayvon Martin case. And it's also people were slowly giving out more information, right? So it wasn't like it was the same information that they were giving out. It was just a little bit more. It was of neighbors. It was the police reducing, producing a little bit more evidence. It was a lawyer finding more evidence. So slowly it was a trickle down of this information with respect to the murder of Trayvon Martin. So, of course, I'm sure, like many other people, I was beginning to get fatigued. And we had a conversation about that, and you brought to my attention how it was really closely related to the Montgomery bus boycott movement. I'm like, well, how? And recall our conversation went along the lines of how much tenacity that they had, how long they were in the cause. And we kind of talk about all of the elements that were associated with it, and then I would have the audacity to say I was tired after only a few weeks when they actually were able to do this for a year. So I began to get this newfound energy with respect to that. But we also found a gap, and we talked about the money. And so now here we find that there may be some money tied to the case, not necessarily directly, but indirectly with this company called Abbott. So I wanted to first ask you, what do you think the involvement of Alec with respect to this Stand Your Ground law, how much impact do you think that will have on the company as well as on the case?
Well, I think the impact will be only as great as those organizations push for it to be in terms of ensuring that we are well-informed consumers of where we're shopping, where we're putting our money to, because once we find out where our money is going in terms of corporate dollars and how they are funding some of the very things that we say we fundamentally disagree with, then you have to make a choice whether or not you're going to continue to shop or purchase those particular items. And you know, and let's not be naive and think it's going to be an easy decision. You know, if you, you know, drank Pepsi your whole life and now all of a sudden you realize that Pepsi's, you know, corporate people are not supporting this one organization, you know, if they had chose to keep supporting it, would you keep drinking Pepsi? I mean, so it's a personal decision and sacrifice that people are going to have to make. I mean, Walmart makes a lot of money off of a whole lot of people. Walmart donates a lot of money, you know, to certain organizations as well. And then we find out Walmart supports, the ALEC organization. So you have to decide, you know, where you fit in on that. And so we can't be naive to just say don't shop at Walmart no more, because Walmart for some cities is the only place there, you know. And so we have to be mindful of that. But you know, all things considered, if we do it right and we do it well and we do it consistently, you're right. Hitting organizations in the pocket, hitting businesses in the pocket is what they hear. And they hear that louder than any protest. They hear that louder than any boycott. If you choose not to spend your money, which means they're not making any money, they hear that fairly quickly.
Okay. So what do you think the impact this will have then on the Trayvon Martin case? Because obviously when you have people that supporting, or I'm going to say indirectly supporting legislation that ultimately was the reason why he hasn't been able to get justice yet, do you think it will have any kind of impact on the case itself?
Well, if there's an impact, it would be indirect, because what we're calling for in the Trayvon Martin case is essentially that the person that is responsible would be arrested. And that after he's arrested, then they would determine what to charge him with. So then the second tier of that is to take a look at the law that was originally stated as to why they did not arrest. Because if you know now, they're not saying that this law would apply anymore. But originally, that's what they said. And until the media and all of those in the media began to question how did this law apply, when it appeared as though George Zimmerman was the aggressor and not Trayvon Martin, it appeared as though Trayvon Martin was standing his ground. So once that came out the way it did, they could no longer say this law applied. But what it did was it did shine the light on the fact that this law has been in place and that there's been a number of times it's been used and used successfully, and that they've had an increase in justifiable homicides since this law has been in place in the state of Florida. It would do now for the due diligence of the NAACP and other organizations to find out what that number has looked like in the other 20-some-odd states that have such a law on their books as well. Has there been an increase in Texas? Has there been an increase in, I want to say, Tennessee or wherever the other states are? You know, do they have data to support that there's been an increase in the amount of justifiable homicides since this law was in place? So the first tier of what was originally always wanted was for an arrest, and that still hasn't happened yet. So this is ancillary. This is secondary in terms of addressing the inequities of the law. I mean, we'll take it, but that's not what we asked for. It's just like the case. We go back to what you were talking about earlier with the Montgomery Boyce boycott. What they wanted was to be able to sit where they wanted to sit on the bus. They didn't want a separate bus. So that, you know, that's not what we asked for. We asked to be able to sit where we want to sit. So in the same thing in this particular case, we're not asking for, you know, just for the law to be looked at, but we're asking for somebody to be arrested for the killing of this young man. So that's what we want. Everything else is secondary, but we want an arrest right now. That's the only thing that's going to calm down the people, is there's an arrest.
So speaking of that, we're now, almost a month in, do you think they will make an arrest this week?
Well, I was hoping they would have made it last week, to be honest, because I didn't want to go into this, you know, resurrection, holy week time you know, still fighting and all the anger and the venom coming across the airwaves. So the grand jury is due to convene on the 10th, which is on Tuesday. They would have more than enough evidence to call people in to testify, and hopefully this wouldn't take long. The special prosecutor already has more than enough evidence. Why she hasn't done anything yet is beyond me, considering her record. So I'm hopeful that we don't go through all of April waiting this thing out, because it's just not fair to the family. It's not even fair to the community of Sanford, because they can't really go forward until there's some sort of decision made on what is the next step, because everybody is holding their breath, waiting to see if he's going to be arrested. And based on what comes out of the special prosecutor and or the grand jury, then, you know, people really can't move on with their lives because it's kind of on hold. So I'm hoping that something happens within the next couple of weeks, but definitely before the end of the month.
I guess what's kind of striking to me is the fact that, you know, just because somebody is arrested doesn't mean that they're guilty. You know, at least it means that, you know, at least you're a suspect. We know he shot him, right? I mean, that's not in the question. The question
right.
is, you know, was it justified, right? And so it seems to me that he should be arrested, or at least, you know, booked on something to say, hey, let's start this investigation, as opposed to letting him walk around free. That's the part that I can't. And I keep going back to the O.J. trial. And, you know, and people laugh when I talk about that, but they arrested O.J. on less than that. You know, and I had no idea whether he did it or not. And, you know, and then they found this trickling of this blood, these little blood drops, and they was planning, and I mean, all his evidence was kind of wishy-washy. Now the son coming out saying this and that. And so, you know, and we'll never know if O.J. did it or not. And I don't think he did, but that's another story. But at any rate, we know this guy did it. How is it that he can walk around and we know he did?
Well, see, that's the reason. It's because when they originally made this decision not to arrest, not to do anything with him, it was because they said that he was following, and if this particular crime, quote unquote, fell under the Sandra Brown law. And so because of that, you know, whoever made the decision, because we're finding out it wasn't the people on the ground, because the lead investigator wanted to arrest them and at least hold them for probable cause and was told not to do so. So at some point, somebody on the ground didn't feel like this thing was going the right way, didn't feel like it went the way Mr. Zimmerman was reporting it, and so wanted to do just that, press charges, have them, you know, arrest them and then, you know, investigate a little further and then, you know, go from there. So the arrest in itself would do just what you said. It should, because then he will have to make statements in front of and hopefully with his attorney, and these statements will now be part of a record. The longer he stays out, he's not having to say anything. He has these attorneys out there speaking for him who've never met him in person and have phone conversations with him. And yet they're out making distortions and saying all kind of crazy things that couldn't remotely be true. So until an arrest is made, everything right now we're hearing on the news is really enough for you to say, just as you stated, we've known people with less evidence be arrested. So it doesn't quite make sense that this guy, after all of this and all of the digging up that's been done, the dissecting of the 911 tapes, going into what his past was like, his previous arrest, all of that. You mean to tell me none of that is important for you to at least make an arrest? And that's where the people's frustration is at.
Yeah,
is
okay.
That we've only asked you for an arrest.
So let's say hypothetically, he got the law on his side, right? I just don't understand why Trayvon Martin don't have the law on his side, too. Not the fact that it's either or, it should be both of them have the law on their side, which means that he was murdered, which means that somebody should be investigating his murder, not defending whether it was justifiable homicide or not. So it's to me, what I'm gathering just by listening to the media and everybody talk is that we're trying to say that he was innocent, right? As opposed to saying, we need to investigate this guy's death. that approach to me, i.e. investigating this guy's death, is a different approach than saying if it was justified homicide or not. And so, to me, Trayvon Martin is the only person that's not represented here. It seems to me that George Zimmerman is the only one that's represented, because he's represented by his attorney, and everybody in the state is saying, yeah, we're trying to dig through this stuff and prove to you all that it was okay for him to kill his black man, as opposed to them saying that we need to investigate what happened so we can determine should he be charged with murder or should we be charged with, you know, assault or first degree, whatever the charges should be. Those, to me, are two different approaches that that is being taken place right now, and not so much in the favor of Trayvon Martin.
I agree, and I think that's why, you know, you have so many people that want to be the voice for Trayvon, because his voice has been silenced by George Zimmerman, who, for no other reason than that he was walking down the street. So, and there's just so many different cases similar to Trayvon Martin that it's almost overwhelming, the amount of gun violence and taking of black life that has occurred. And it's not that it's new information. I think it's just been newly reported, and that it's leading the news as opposed to a segue into a next part of the news hour or whatever. And so I think that's the part that probably also has kind of have people on edge. And when you look at the Trayvon Martin case, I totally agree. There's, I just don't understand how George Zimmerman hasn't been arrested yet. And I agree that Stand Your Ground should work for Trayvon as well, considering, you know, it appears for all what we know thus far that George Zimmerman was the aggressor. And so whatever Trayvon did to protect himself from this man who drove up on him talking about where you going and who are you and all of that other sort of stuff. So, you know, it just seems though as though it should have a positive impact for Trayvon's memory that, you know, he did, you know, try to stand his ground, and George Zimmerman need to be dealt with on that part of it.
Exactly right. 323-580-5712 is the number to call. 323-580-5712 is the number to call. Press 1 to talk, 2 to listen. We're going to go to the phone lines right now. We're going to go to last 4, 9984. You're on listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Dr. Monica Lewis, how are you there, Professor Cook?
Absolutely wonderful. Welcome to the show. You got a comment or a question?
I do. I have. I want to pose a question, and then I have a comment as well. In regards to the Trayvon Martin incident, what do we do when they don't arrest them, and what do we do when they do arrest them and find that he was justified in what he did? Those are my questions. My comment that I have is that at the end of the day is, Jima has stated earlier about the numerous incidents that we've had that are similar to this, and that, you know, we're pushing forward because we're tired. We need to really be addressing protocol, because the real issue here is that there's a double standard that some people it's okay to do some things and then some people it's not. When you're saying that Zimmerman has counsel and Trayvon does not, No one's representing Trayvon. But at the end of the day, we need to look at the reason why these series of events continue is because no one is addressing protocol. No one's addressing protocol of the justice system. Nobody is addressing protocol of the police department. The same is with the public school system. Nobody's addressing any of the protocol. And we have this spiral because nobody is addressing that. When we address the protocol issue, why isn't protocol being followed? Why isn't policy being followed? Then we can address the rest of what's going on. Nobody's being held accountable because of the protocol.
You know, that's a great question. Thank you, Dr. Lewis, for that. Let me say first, you talked about, and I'm interpreting your question here to say, what if George Zimmerman was innocent? Right? Let's say he was arrested, and evidence was presented and he was innocent. I think people would be okay with that. I think they would be okay simply because the protocol, the process was followed. I think what is most disheartening in this case is the fact that he shot this young black man. Basically, everybody heard the 911 call. That was evidence enough in itself that says he shouldn't have shot him, right? So that's part one. Part two is that the arresting officer said that what he gave him was hogwash and he should be arrested, right? And then all of a sudden, this prosecutor drives 50 miles out of his way to convince him that it was not the case. So, again, you go back to the protocol issue. All the things that they failed to do with respect to protocol is the reason we're in this situation today. And so I believe that if it is found that George Zimmerman is innocent, I think people can accept it. But they want people to do we want the police department, we want the Justice Department to do its due diligence when it comes to African Americans, the same as it would be for a Caucasian American. So let me say that first. Secondly, you know, when you do find yourself in, or when a person finds yourself in a situation where protocol is not being followed, there's a double standard. I think in the past we've always kind of brushed it on the rug. We've always assumed that that has been the case. It's always been like that. That's the way they always treat us. But I believe today, and I said this last week with the title of is Trayvon Martin the sacrificial lamb for black justice? I believe today we're saying enough. We're saying we're not going to stand for it because there are too many incidents that happens across America that we're finding out about. And social media is a vehicle that's allowing us to do that. And what I mean by that is just last week we also talked about it happened to what's his name? Tyler Perry, when he was racially profiled, right? In the past, we wouldn't be able to know that because we didn't have an outlet to get that information out. We also talked about what happened in New York when this past veteran was killed in his home when the police entered his apartment. Again, we were never known about that, right? But now since social media has closed the gap with the amount of information that we're able to obtain, it's closed the gap on how I can know what's going on in New York and California and now Florida. And I'm saying, wait a minute. This is not just happening to me here. It is not the way we're supposed to be treated. So people are starting to stand up and says enough is enough. Gina, your comment.
The other thing around with what Dr. Lewis was saying, too, is that when you talk about protocol, I agree with you. I think that once the arrest is made and then a decision is made about that particular arrest, whether or not they keep them or not, I do think that that will – people's focus will shift from George Zimmerman to the Sanford Police Department. Because if you recall back a week or so ago when the NAACP and Ben Jealous was down there holding these different town hall meetings, they talked about all of the different people that came and was talking about all the things that had happened over the years of problems that had happened with people being arrested and being mistreated by the police department. And if you know this, that this particular police chief was only on duty 8 months, and he was allegedly brought in to clean up the Sanford Police Department. So I think if after whatever happens with George Zimmerman happens, and all goes with however it goes, whether he's held over for trial or whatever, either way, Sanford Police Department is next to be investigated. They have to be, because this was a botched job in terms of how you investigate a crime. I mean, we don't know if they gathered any evidence, if they taped off the area. It's a whole lot we don't have answers to in terms of how did they come to the conclusion that night that there was not enough to hold him and to let him go. Where is that evidence at?
So to me, when it comes to the question of protocol, when it comes to process, in this case, it's clear that the process wasn't followed. It is clear that protocol was violated, and that's why there are so many questions. And so, you know, again, that was a great question, Dr. Lewis. I hope we answered it to your satisfactory. 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to go to the phone lines again. We're going to take a call from last four, 3041. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You have a question or a comment?
Hey, I got a comment. How you doing, Patrick?
Absolutely wonderful. Yeah, now, give us your name and where you're calling from.
No, my name is Alex. I'm calling from Dallas.
Hi, welcome to the show, Alex.
All right. Now I just called in probably about 3 to 5 minutes ago. Now I want to get this right. You said that Like you said, if they with the foul protocol. And George Zimmer, you know, with they arrested him and everything, and it came out that he was not guilty or what have you, you think people would be okay with that? I disagree with that only because, for the simple fact that because so much injustice has been done already, the fact of the matter is this, if he was to go to trial and get acquitted, it'd be no different than March 3rd, 1991, when they was torturing the streets of L.A. And those cops that who beat Rodney King got acquitted. That's where we at right now. I mean, and I hate to say it, and it's not a racial statement, it's just fact. It just seems to me that whenever a young black person's life is on the line, it seems like nobody gives a damn.
I can respect that, but let me say this: if it is the case that the evidence is produced, and that it is found that he was truly justified, now I'm not saying that it was the situation. And maybe I should have prefaced by saying that, but for the most part, you know, if it was truly justified, if there was evidence, there were pieces that we just did not know. For example. You know, I'm just saying hypothetical now. We know this didn't happen. But what if it was true that he did have a piece? Right? Let's say he did have a piece. And, you know, we don't know what he was doing when he was in the neighborhood. I'm not going to even go into speculation because I don't even want that to put that out in the atmosphere. But at the end of the day, if it was that he was truly justified in doing that, I think people will be okay with that. But they want the due diligence to take place. And right now, based on the evidence, he should not be set free. I definitely agree with you on that. But if it is the case that he is found innocent, do you truly believe, Alex, that people are going to be like, they're going to be in an uproar?
With what you just said, it's kind of hard to even put it in the perspective and the mindset of people that he would even be innocent to begin with. I mean, because since protocol was not found, 911 calls and all of that. I mean, according to the 911 call, they told us, do not follow, we will handle it. So to me, because I guess to me right now, the damage is already done. So I guess you can't revert back to, you know, what could have. We can only go by what the evidence is presented at this point. To me, it's like Kanye West said in one of his songs, two words. He said, "Look, God, I basically know now. We get racially profiled, cuffed up and hosed down, pimped up and hosed down. It's not. I mean, it's that all over again."
And I definitely agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what's the difference between Trayvon Martin and Emmett Till?
Right. Exactly. Right. And so, and again, I think Dr. Lewis was speaking in the hypothetical. And let's get Dr. Lewis back on the line. Dr. Lewis, is that what you were, where you were going with that? Is in the event that he was, in fact, innocent, or if it was the fact that we know based on the evidence today, and if he was found innocent? Which context of the question did you have?
Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Okay. You know, I'm trying to be as kind about it as I possibly can, because there's some other factors that we have to look at too as well. I'm trying to speak in the hypothetical, but I'm also trying to be realistic because of the other factors that you have to look at, that this man's father is a U.S. magistrate and has been in the field for several years. Mother was a clerk. As far as ethnicity, I hate to bring it to it as well. You also have to look at the last name Zimmerman, which means that they are descendants of Jews. Pretty much Jewish run the media, pretty much Jewish run the world, and most of, you know, these large syndicates as far as government, as far as the police department, you know, the judicial system, the whole thing. So there's a whole lot of other factors there that I didn't want to bring in, but I'm sorry that I had to, that we have to look at when it comes to the realistic part of it. The one thing that everybody's looking at is that as far as this special prosecutor, the media, the whole thing, they're just waiting for it to die down. They're just actually thinking that it's going to die down because this is what we do. We get in an uproar, you know, and we're, you know, you got enough people barking this time. You got the right people barking this time, but they're actually waiting for it to cool down, and hopefully they're thinking that nothing else is going to come out of it.
Yeah, that's why we can't let this issue die down. You're right about that.
We can't let it die down, and that's another thing that we hit. Prime example, you got to look at the election. Everybody was all up in an uproar and excited in 08. Are we as excited in 2012 as we were in 08? And we have to continue with the repetition of being excited. And they know our pattern, okay? And so we have to change the pattern, and that's something that we as a people have not gotten to yet, that we have to continue to spark. And that's how the civil rights movement continued. That's how women got their rights, and et cetera, et cetera. And we haven't caught on to that yet, that you continue to fight it. So, I am speaking in a hypothetical. I pray that it stays hypothetical, but there's some just facts there. And as far as gentleman Alex was asking earlier, you know, as far as the difference between Trayvon Martin and Emmett Till, the difference is that we fought for a real long time to be where we are. And the other part of it is what you said earlier, Professor, is that the social media is out there. So if you're tapped into it, there's no real reason why you can't, you should be able to say, oh, I didn't know about this. Or, I mean, you have more black talk radio than you had in a century.
Yeah,
so there's
true.
Really no reason for anyone not to be informed.
All right, great comment. So let's take the other part then, Alex. The fact that if it is the case that we end up in a situation where, based on the facts that we know as they are today, based on the 911 call, based on all the evidence that presented itself, and then he saw innocent, oh yeah, we got a problem. I think there's going to be a real big problem. The question is, how do you think it's going to manifest itself? Alex, what will you think it's going to be a riot, or you think it's going to be something else?
All I know is this. It just seems to me that, and I know, judging from back from when it happened back in 91, and it's probably, you know, still the same today, that people, especially black people, are very emotional about this thing right now. You understand what I'm saying? So and with everybody's emotions running high and everything like that, there's no telling what could go down. I mean, America can look like the summer of 68, you know what I mean, or even to take it back a year earlier, I mean, in Newark, New Jersey, with those riots. I mean, and the sad part is that if something like that was to go down, I mean, there are places that will take a long time to recover from that. I mean, I'm a Brick City, New York City kid. I mean, I'm sorry, for those of y'all who don't know, Brick City is Newark. And growing up, and those riots happened in 67, and that, I mean, that's a place that is still yet to recover from that, you know what I mean? So we could stand a great chance of that, I mean, or something of that nature, you know. So, I mean, I would like to hope and pray that it doesn't get to that, and justice will be served. But in the illustrious words of the late, great Richard Pryor, I mean, we go down to the courthouse looking for some justice. That's what we find, just us.
That's a true statement.
So, I mean, this is what's staring us in the face right now.
Yeah.
But like you and the good doctor was saying about the social medias and the networks and all that, I mean, yes, I mean, that is helping now, because we're in the information age, and we have access to more technology now than ever before.
Right.
So
right.
I mean, so there's, like you said, there's no way that folks can skate by like they used to and it not be seen.
That's true. Jimmy, you got any comments?
I do, and I think the other thing we have to be, you know, careful about, and backing up what Dr. Lewis was saying, we talk about, you know, who's in charge, and then what the caller, Alec, was saying, when we talk about what the potential could be, where places haven't revealed after 48, 43 years, then you look at, was that what they wanted, you know? So they want us to go off half crazy and burn down our neighborhood, because they're not going to come back in and rebuild our neighborhood no way, because they haven't. We have too many examples of places that we lost our minds and went in and burned down and tore up everything, and some of those places have never been rebuilt. And then those same environments and those same group of people, but what are they building more of? They're building more prisons and less food. And so now the table is turned, so we have to be real strategic. I guarantee you the day Rosa Parks was arrested, there was a lot of emotion about that. And so those people had to be real clear and real strategic about what their next move was going to be, and they had to be willing to wait. One of the things that gets us in trouble is that we're no longer willing to wait, and we're no longer willing to fight for the full 12 rounds. We get mad when a fight go to full 12 rounds, as opposed to how Mike Tyson used to knock people out quick and fast. You know, about a fight was built to go 12 rounds. So when it goes the full 12 rounds, sometimes we get upset about that. Dang, he should have knocked him out in five, da-da-da-da-da. So we've got to be willing to fight the entire battle, not just the little stuff. So if they choose, what do we want right now? What is the thing we want right now to Trayvon Martin's case? We want an arrest made. Okay, then the next step is going to be, what happens if? And I hope, and I'm pretty sure, that the people sitting around the table, because every attorney I've seen from representing him and representing that family, they know what they're talking about. I've been pretty impressed with them. So I'm pretty sure they've gotten with some people, and they're having this conversation about next steps. So, and you heard Reverend Al talk about, you know, doing some economic boycotts of some places and some things. And so there's already some talk about next steps. And then when you take a look at the fact that we know whether or not they arrest George Zimmerman, hold him over trial or whatever, the Sanford Police Department is still culpable here, because this could not have even had to go on for this long. There is still some incompetency and some ineptness in that Sanford Police Department that needs to be dealt with on a Department of Justice level. And so that's a whole nother avenue. What we've got to learn how to do is to be strategic. We've got to learn how to fight the full fight and not give up so quick when we don't see what we want right away. Everything can be made in an instant, but sometimes, as I go back to, that boycott lasted for over a year. Those people walked and did not get on that bus for over a year, because what they said they wanted was to be able to sit on the bus where they wanted to sit. They didn't want a separate bus. They didn't want a bus that only rode certain times of the day and night. They wanted the same bus. And that's what they fought for, and that's what they got. And it took them a long time to get it, and we've only been really in this thing for 30 days. Surely, we can last a little bit longer than 30 days and keep the fire and keep the zeal, because that's what's going to get us results. You were right, Dr. Lewis. They expect us to say, whoo, this is too much, I'm done. They expect us to fight for a little while and make a little bit of noise, and then we're done with it. But here's the thing. The reason why now you have this divide, so they say, on economic lines and racial lines, is that it's too much coverage on Trayvon Martin, because we're still talking about it, and we are forcing them to talk about it, because we're still rallying, we're still marching, we're still, you know, getting people where they need to get. We're still talking about it. I do not recall anybody saying there was too much coverage on Natalie Holloway. I do not recall anybody saying there was too much coverage on JonBenet Ramsey, and they still talk about them two little white people today. Today, they still want to talk about them. Matter of fact, I want to say they had somebody on a couple weeks ago on Good Morning America talking about JonBenet Ramsey. So that, we can't forget. We can't allow them to tell us that we're talking about it too much. We keep talking. We keep fighting. We keep marching. We keep protesting. We do it all. It's not a either or. It's all of it. If it's boycott, figure out what you can give up and go do that. If you can't stop drinking Pepsi every day, then, you know, just drink it once a day. I mean, you know, find out what you can do to be a part of the movement and a part of where we are right now, not just the moment, but how can you take this thing where we can look back to our children and say, we were a part of that. We were a part of making that happen. As our parents and our grandparents said to us, they were there. They marched. They boycotted. They sat in. I want to be able to tell my son I did something. That's what keeps me motivated to keep fighting.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. It's time for another break. But when we return, we're going to shift a little bit. And in fact, we're going to bring on hip-hop legend, hip-hop educator, featured on CBS Radio, London's Bang Radio, and other national media outlets. His name? Larry Henderson, a.k.a. Locke. Be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, AskGema. And AskGema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my
need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one nonprofit. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Can you hear? Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to be having joining with us is artist Larry Henderson, a.k.a. Locke. Now, Locke is a hip-hop educator featured on CBS Radio, London's Bang Radio, and other national media outlets. His new album, Lesson One, Hip-Hop and Education, is now available on iTunes and Amazon.com. Now, I'm excited to have Larry join us today, primarily because he reminds me of, I'm not going to give it away. I tell you, when you hear his music, I want you to call in and tell me who you think he reminds you of. But it is interesting and refreshing to hear such an artist that come out and now has a different message, if you will, something that we haven't heard in probably ever, not in this particular context. So I'm going to play some music for you, and I want you to take a listen at some of his work. Take a listen.
Black women in Congress, stand up. Black women in the Senate, we salute. All women in politics, stand up. Without y'all, there gonna be no us, and we salute. It's dedicated to the women, man. The first black woman in Congress, Shirley Chisholm, man. Unbought, unbossed, that's how she got it in. 1972, she even ran for president. The 91st Congress in 69. New York's 12th district, ahead of her time, ahead of her line. But next, less acknowledge Barbara Shaw and out of Houston, Texas. It's just courage with the power that describes the soul. I so elected to the House of Representatives in 72. Yvonne Burke was elected in that same year, and before that, she has served as the vice chair of the Democratic National Convention. I can't forget to mention a Chicago politician, Bernice Collins, here served 23, the most powerful black woman in Congress history. I feel you get my sisters. Black women in Congress, stand up.
All right, that's Locke. That's one of his songs of his new album, Lesson One. I want to know what you think about that. He's going to be joining here momentarily to talk about the new album and a lot of his work. He's going to tell us a little bit of how he got started, why that work is so important, and all of those good things. So, again, I think he's going to be something that is going to be real refreshing, someone that is has a different flavor. And we'd love to get you to call in and let me know what you think about his music. He's going to be joining us here momentarily again to talk a little bit about his music and his work, and I'm pretty excited about that. But in the meantime, I want to continue the conversation here, and I want to shift a little bit towards this young lady that she wrote a little a video blog, as we call it, and she was out on YouTube, and it says, "I am not Trayvon Martin." And I want to get you to kind of listen to the video and try to figure out, what she's really trying to say here. Take a listen. I'm not going to play the whole video, but I want to play enough of it for you to get kind of an indication on where she was trying to go. Take a listen.
I am not Trayvon Martin. I am not Troy Davis. And to the middle-class, white, socially concerned activist who wears a shirt emblazoned with those slogans, you are wrong. I know you wear that shirt to stand in solidarity with Trayvon, Troy, and other victims of injustice. The purpose of those shirts is to humanize these victims of our society by likening them to the middle-class white activist wearing it. And once we've humanized the victims, this proves to us the arbitrariness of their deaths and thereby the injustice at play. But the fact of the matter is that these men's deaths are anything but arbitrary. The fact that the real Troy Davis and Trayvon Martin and countless other victims of oppression are buried under 6 feet of cold dirt while we middle-class white activists are alive, marching, and wearing their names is an indication that our societal system is working exactly as it's intended. A more accurate t-shirt to display on my white body would be, "I am George Zimmerman."
Okay, so as you can see here, she was trying to, I guess, sympathize with Trayvon in so many words, right? What I gathered from the conversation, again, I need you to weigh in on this one, 323-580-5712. But what I gathered was that she was saying that all of these people walking around talking about they are Trayvon Martin really don't have a clue. They don't have a clue about what the experience is for an African-American male in that situation. And for them to say that and them to kind of sympathize with them is really kind of a false equivalency, if you will. And she also said that she could more or less side with George Zimmerman because of what she was taught growing up, how to fear specifically black men. So I thought the conversation was interesting. And, of course, it caused an uproar across the blogosphere, People were blogging about it, tweeting about it, video blogging about it, you know, responding in every way that they could about this particular issue. I wonder what you think, though. I'm going to get you to weigh in. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. It looks like we got Locke on the phone, on the line here. Locke, you with us?
Hello?
Yeah, this is Larry?
Hey, yes, this is what's going on. This is Larry Locke from Smart Music Entertainment. How are you doing today, brother?
Oh, absolutely wonderful. Welcome to the show. We were just talking about you not too long ago. We was actually going into talk a little bit about this I Am Not Trayvon Martin case, just kind of
right.
filling the block thing until you got on, but glad you can join us.
Yeah, like I said, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Let me put you on hold for a second, and we'll get started here momentarily.
Okay.
Okay, Alice, you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about the case that the video I just played, or the audio I just played about I Am Not Trayvon Martin. What do you think about the comment that she just made?
I mean, truth, I see where she was trying to go with that, and I've been taught, you know, I mean, if you're trying, you're dying, you know what I mean?
right.
But the fact of the matter is, I mean, it's almost like, okay, it's just like she's saying, okay, I sympathize with Trayvon Martin and Troy Davis, but, and see, whenever you add but, it's always something behind that, but it's almost like justifying what George Zimmerman did. You understand
what
I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, it may explain why, but it doesn't excuse what he did. You follow what I'm saying?
Exactly right.
Yeah, so that's what I got out of it.
I just don't understand why she would have the audacity to do something like that. And I think that was what most of the uproar was about, the fact that, you know, she's, you know, going out there saying, hey, you know, this is what we're taught. You know, we're taught to fear black men. You know, what do you think about that?
That's interesting. I mean,
it is.
I mean, on the flip side, I mean, you can say that during slavery, we was taught to fear white men. We're done. And dogs.
That's true.
So, I mean, it's no good if you can't switch it.
That's right. All right, we're going to go ahead.
Oh, no, it was I just wanted to piggyback on something real quick. I don't know who the young lady was that was speaking about. She made a very valid point about us fighting and not fighting long enough, and it's good to go. You know, well, I mean, that's the thing with the hip hop legend, also Professor Griffin, Public Enemy. He said, he has a quote that I like. I don't know if it's his, but I heard it from him. He said, "Revolution is not an event; it's a process."
I think that coincides
with what the sister was saying before you had went to break. I just wanted to get that in there.
Awesome. Okay, we're going to shift now to Larry Locke Henderson, again, the hip-hop artist that we have scheduled for today. But I do would like to thank, of course, as always, my co-host Jima for joining us. And Alex, a special thanks to you. I think you and I are going to be talking here pretty soon after the show. And I will be giving you a call.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And also Dr. Lewis, again, thank you for your words of wisdom as well. So let's shift now to Larry Locke Henderson. Larry, welcome to the show. It is definitely a pleasure to have you join us. I do have a couple of questions for you, so I'm glad you were able to join us. So first, tell us a little bit about your background. How'd you got started in this business?
I started rhyming in about the third or fourth grade. You know, I was the kid banging on the lunch tables, making beats, freestyling. And then as far as the whole hip-hop movement, you know, I was, you know, breakdancing on the cardboard and pop-locking. And, you know, that was my introduction to hip-hop. You know, it was the people in my community that were into it, that were rhyming, that us kids looked up to. And then, of course, you know, we turned on the radio and, you know, we hear Run DMC and LL Cool J and, you know, MC Shan and Public Enemy and those types of groups from that era. So from then on, you know, I've been an MC, and I've also always been reading, always been interested in learning more, you know, and that was a result of, you know, either having arguments with different friends and wanting to learn more, or being forced to read particular books like, you know, the autobiography of Malcolm X and books like that. And, you know, as I got older, I wanted to share the knowledge, you know, that I was learning and put it into rhyme. And then I also noticed the shift as far as the young opinion of education, how it went from how important education is to why do I need this. And
right.
Once, you know, lesson one came about, so that we can, number one, have a tool that's educational, and then number two, begin to have open dialogue about exactly how important education is, and that, you know, we can get into that discussion and hopefully change some minds.
Okay, I want to play a track from the lesson one album, and I want you to respond because it's a lot of good information in it. So, you know, when I listen to your album, I feel like I'm smarter by listening to it, as opposed to listening to some hip hop like wasting my time. You know, so right away I was able to gather that I was able to come up by listening to your record. So I'm gonna play, and I want to get you to respond.
I feel you in my sisters. Black women in Congress, stand up. Black women in the Senate, we salute. All women in politics, stand up. Without y'all, there could be no us, and we salute. It's dedicated to the women, man. The first black woman in Congress, Shirley Chisholm, man. Unbought, unbossed, that's how she got it in. 1972, she even ran for president. The 91st Congress in 69. New York's 12th district, ahead of a time, ahead of a line. But next, let's acknowledge Barbara Jordan out of Houston, Texas. It's just courage with the power that describes the soul. I'm so elected to the House of Representatives in 72. Yvonne Burke was elected in that same year, and before that, she has served as the vice chair of the Democratic National Convention. I can't forget to mention a Chicago politician. Cartese College here served 23, the most powerful black woman in Congress history. I feel you hit my sisters. Black women in Congress, stand up.
First of all, I got to say the beat is hot, you know. And the lyrics, man, I mean, oh, my God. Again, I say when I listen to your music, it's like I'm smarter every time I listen to the track, because, I mean, it's hard to digest it all in one listening, but it has to be one of my favorites. Where did that come from?
That came from a couple of reasons, a couple of things. Number one, I wanted to do a song where, you know, we could pay homage to the women who pioneered the political movement as far as African-American women are concerned. And the ladies that I talked about in that song were the pioneers, from what I gathered, from the things that I've learned. They were the pioneers that, you know, spearheaded, you know, women being into positions of power, especially on a political level. And we just wanted to pay homage to them, do something different outside of, you know, the typical things that you hear about women in hip-hop or about women in politics in general. Usually when it's on the news or something like that, it's coming from a negative light, or you're just listening to them comment on something else. So this was, you know, this was just an attempt to shed some light on who these ladies are and, you know, pretty much give respect due.
All right. So when I tell you, when I listen to the music again, I think a couple of things. But one, I don't want to date myself when I say this, but, you know, I would consider your music to be conscious. You know, that's a term that in my generation we use about all of the things that we talk. I'm not sure what the language is today, but I would consider your music to be conscious.
Man, you know.
Is it? Okay. And so, and so what I was reminded of, and then, you know, and by no stretch of the imagination, I'm saying that the same quality or the same background, but it reminds me of KRS music. I mean, the fact that he kind of introduced that to me. So did he have any influence on your work at all?
Well, I mean, it was a variety of MCs that definitely had an influence on the music that I'm putting out, but definitely KRS-One, Blastmaster KRS-One and Boogie Down Productions. Of course, you know, when Criminal Mind came out, it was a phenomenal album. And then, you know, he came out with, you know, the Edutainment album,
you know what I mean?
And, you know, all of the music that he's provided. So, you know, he's definitely one of the best ever. You know, he's definitely one of the top lyricists of all time. And, you know, I was just influenced by his music overall. So, you know, he definitely played a part just from paying attention to his creativity. You know, the dude's a phenomenal lyricist.
No doubt. So what also struck me is the fact that, you know, it's very few people that take that approach. I mean, you got Nas, Talib, and you have a couple of other conscious rappers. And but most rappers went in the direction of what one would call gangster rap or along those lines. What made you decide to go this route as opposed to gangster rap?
Well, you know, I think that this was just my attempt at refocusing the thought process about how important education is, you know. So I wanted to do that. I wanted to make an educational album so that we would be able to go into different communities and have that dialogue. And I figured that it had to be a hip-hop album first and foremost in order to do that. But, you know, hip-hop, it's really just a snapshot of whatever it is that you're going through. And you know, I think other artists that do different type of music, you know, they're like little news reporters. You know what I mean? they're just telling you what's going on in their community, good or bad. And, you know, our shift as far as Smart Music Entertainment was concerned was just to say, okay, we know all of that. You know, we know that there's a variety of problems that's going on. You know, it's all types of hell that people are catching. But at the same time, you can listen to this music and it can be uplifting and you can learn something, but it can still be a hardcore educational hip-hop feel to it. You know, you can still get the hip-hop vibe, you can still get the hip-hop feel. You're just going to learn something, and that's going to be the positive aspect of it, and it's going to be strictly educational. But, you know, that's not the takeaway from the other artists that are telling the stories about things that's going on in their communities, because you need to hear that. You know what I mean? It's what's going on, and until we change what's going on in our communities, we're not going to hear anything different. So, you know, both aspects are important, because I could have came out with an album talking about how terrible the school systems are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think it would have, you know, I'm not sure what type of response I would have gotten, but it wouldn't be as positive as the album I have out now, but it would be just as relevant.
You know, I hear Nas talk about, a lot of times, talk about how his album sales are not at the same rate as the ones that are pushing gangster rap, that are pushing hip-hop in a negative, and I'm not going to say negative aspect, but in a different aspect with respect to, you know, either informing or using the English language in a positive frame. And so do you find that you're having faced with the same challenges with people getting more artists to more stations to play your work because it's not in that negative vein, or you finding you're getting received a lot more because you are doing some positive?
Well, I think I'm getting received a lot more because it's number one, I consider it to be, I think it's really good music.
True.
But you know, number two, there's a lot of things that's contributing to record sales from a variety of artists. You know, gangster rap is not dominating the airwaves, you know what I mean, as it did back in, you know, the late 90s, the early 2000s.
That's
out now, you know, you got Drake's and, you know what I mean, he's not a gangster rapper.
Right.
And, you know, there's the, you know, iTunes and Amazon, you know, there's just a variety of factors that's going into why people buy this and why people don't buy that. And I just think as an artist, you know what I mean, you just have to continuously work hard. And, you know, keep putting out material, especially once you have once you capture the audience, once you have the stage, you know what I mean, once you have that platform to get something out to, then you got to use it. You know what I mean? And I think that if you continuously, you know, work hard at your craft, you continuously put out music, then you know, who knows how things are going to affect your sales. But you know, it's just so many factors that's affecting why people buy music right now. You can download a lot of stuff that you couldn't before, you know what I mean? Or a lot of people just come out with albums now and it's only one or two or three songs that you like, but you don't like the rest of the album. You know what I mean? It's just so many different things. And you can preview the whole album now. It's not like when I was growing up, it was a tape. You know what I mean? I couldn't listen to one song on a tape. You know what I mean? I had no idea what was on side B.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's, you know, things have just changed. You know, the public is more demanding of everything on your album being crazy.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's just a matter of getting out there, you know, and working hard and putting, you know, putting something out that people really want to hear.
So have you used social media at all to kind of get the word out about it? Or if you have, how are you using social media and what vehicles are you using today?
Oh, well, the album, you know, number one, it's available on our website, smarthiphopmusic.blogspot.com, but it's also available on iTunes, Amazon, Napster, you know, all your major digital distributors. And it's being well received. You know, we've number one on Amazon, hot new releases, you know, and just it's being well received. The album is doing well online, and we'll either do that or we also, when I'm doing my workshops or going into different schools, we give the albums away at those types of events. So, you know, those are sales that aren't even counted. But it's doing very well as far as social media outlets. But then again, it's a lot of hard work. You know what I mean? It's telling people, it's getting people to listen to your album is the hardest part, because it's educational hip-hop, so people aren't jumping to hear something that's educational.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you got to, you know, get people to the point where they're going to open their minds and give you a chance, and then once they give you that chance, you can take it from there.
Great. It's time for another break, but when we return, more with Locke. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my equal.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training.
So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, Locke, I want to play another song, and I want to get you to respond to, what went into making this song. Every time I listen to it, I promise you I get a little bit smarter. So take a listen. I like that, especially the whole Benjamin Banneker part, because people that listen to the show regularly know I'm a software engineer. In fact, graduate and undergraduate degrees in computer science. And I took a sabbatical from engineering several years ago, and I taught high school mathematics at the school that I grew up in. I just took a year out to kind of take back to the community, which really raised me, and give back. After being in the military, after going through school, after traveling the world, I wanted to take that experience back. And one of the things that I found was that teaching math, I taught algebra, geometry, and calculus. And teaching math, and I taught math, but I used music to teach certain concepts. And what was interesting was that when I was teaching the course, I would play a song, and then during the test, I would play the exact same song. And it was amazing how much their scores improved, because they were able to make an association with the lesson that I was teaching into that song. And even when they're listening to it today, they always talk about, Mr. Cook, I remember, and they still tie. I wonder, by kids listening to your music and with the teaching that's going on, do you think they make that same association?
Yes. You know, if teachers on some occasions, as they do, use my album as a supplement to whatever it is that they're teaching. You know, for example, it could be, something on the presidents, and you could play the first 25 presidents, or something about the states, and you could play 50 states. When things like that happen or occur, then the repetition, you know, hearing the song, actually liking the music helps you to memorize more information, and it definitely helps them to just retain the things that I'm saying, especially if they already have an interest in the subject matter. So it definitely helps. You know, I mean, it's all good when teachers can use the album to, like I said, be a supplement for something that they have going on in their classroom.
You know, I definitely agree with you because, you know, the classic or the age-old tradition of the ABC song. You know, A, B, C, D. You know, that song, many kids learn their ABCs just by that song. So there's obviously an association with learning and music that I think you've really mastered with something that is not so trivial to learn, right? And so by adding that musical component to me is just genius in itself. So I want to shift the conversation now to a little bit more about smart music entertainment. I heard you use that a couple of times. I want to talk a little bit about that umbrella and a little bit about the background in that organization.
You know, smart music entertainment basically came about because of this album. You know, once I made the decision to go ahead and do this album, then I knew I had to form a company that was going to push this album out and do the type of things that we wanted to do with this music. You know, we definitely wasn't, you know, it was, my thought pattern was, irregardless of mainstream media and whatever else is going on, we're going to push this album out and we're going to make it do what it do. That's what Charles said. So,
right.
You know, definitely put a team together. Shout-outs to Kenya as the CMO. Shout-outs to my man, Derek D-Rock Ellison, for being the executive music producer. He's the one who produced this whole album with me. And then we got Devon, who's pretty much the videographer. Shout-outs to Jermaine Jackson, who's the graphic designer, who actually, you know, drew the cover as an original art piece. We're working on the cover for Lesson 2 as we speak. And shout out to Fred, who's the photographer. You know, we just have a small unit, but we get a lot done. And, you know, we're definitely going to... Oh, can't forget Young Nice, Curtis Nice Glad, who's the other artist on the album. He's featured on Slavery, not Feel, but his song is Slavery and Drugs. And, you know, it's a tight unit. But we got a lot of work to do. We're getting a lot of things done, and the team works hard. Smart Music Entertainment. We're definitely here to put out positive, educational, hip hop, hardcore, soulful music.
Right. Do you ever think you would dabble a little bit into the what we call the gangster rap area?
Well, I mean, you know, I do. I write about whatever it is that I'm going through. So when I have experience that aren't so pleasant, you know, I've rapped about it. You know, I've been rhyming for a while, so I've pretty much touched on every subject that was near and dear to my heart. But as far as Smart Music Entertainment is concerned, our goal is to put out positive educational hip-hop music. But that's not going to limit me from just doing music outside of this. It just wouldn't get released through Smart Music Entertainment. But I, you know, as an artist, you can't limit your pen. You know, as an artist, you
right.
really have to go anywhere that the pen takes you, because my job is to create pictures with words. So I can't curb my creativity or just, you know, dull my senses.
You know, I like that. I like the fact that you talk a little bit, a lot about your experience is what drives you. Your experience is what, you know, your pen follows your experiences, basically, in so many words. And so... you know, all this education you talked about, Ruggers. What's your background?
Well, you know, I ended up being graduated from Rutgers University. I came in as a botany major, but I ended up graduating getting my degree in communications, African studies, and labor studies.
Wow!
But you know, it's you know, I had a beautiful experience and. It's, you know, made friendships that's going to last forever. And, you know, college is college, man.
what was the shift from botany to communications?
Man, college for me was, I was just going through a lot, you know, really trying to find my way at the time, you know, going through a lot of personal issues, going through a lot of family issues. And, you know, real it's hard when you're majoring in something like botany. It was you really got to be extremely focused. And there's a lot of things that I would do differently had I been a little smarter, you know what I mean? But just ended up making a different business plan somewhere around my third year. And I decided that, okay, you know what I mean, one day I'm going to just do this music thing full time. And I thought that, you know, the communication degree, especially at Rutgers, they have a great communication program.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
not just, you know what I mean, it's a really good school. So I figured that I would be able to shift gears and learn some skills that will help me to promote a company or promote some music as I put it out. And then African studies and labor studies, I just had so many classes in both those subjects that I just ended up minoring in them. And that's just really, you know, that's real talk. That's really how it happened.
That's great. Okay, I want to play another song and then get you to respond to this one. You know, I played the first two was absolutely my favorite, but I also love these two. Again, you get smarter every time you listen. Take a listen.
From enslaved Africans, people use words to confuse to how we're trapped again. Our lineage is deep within the challenger. Our family tree consists of people that had influenced the planet, bro. We managed to lose sense of self. We don't identify with the heritage like African American is not African. But listen to me, I'ma have you black again. Pumping up your fist and using pics to fix your naps again. I like to give respect to Imhotep, considered by the world to be the first architect, the high priest of the sun god Ra at Heliopolis. He built the seven pyramids in Egypt and they still exist. Poet and philosopher, a recognized genius. He diagnosed 200 different diseases. They say Hippocrates is the father of medicine. But Imhotep lived 2,000 years ahead of him. Kingstown walls spread, second ruler of Kemet. He was said to have conquered Greece by Herodotus, the first ruler to believe in one God. Was Amenhotep the fourth, later known as Akhenaten King.
Again, you know, what can I say? I mean, the beats are nice, the lyrics are just tight. I mean, man, you're really doing it. I mean, you know, really doing it.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Shout outs to my man, Shamar Newsom, for providing that track, and my man, Otis Blunt, Reverend Otis Blunt, for providing the vocals on that song. And,
all right.
You know, it was definitely just something that I wanted to make a song that acknowledged our history past slavery, you know, to bring light to our lineage, our heritage, our culture. You know, that's why the first line is, we don't come from slaved, but from enslaved Africans. It's very important to, in my opinion, to not just say slaves, but to say enslaved Africans. So, you know, that was a song that highlighted that particular subject.
You know, when I listen to your music, again, I use a term that I did when I was in college, which was that conscious. And so it sounds like to me, and then I want you to respond, but some of this history, it comes from places like Stolen Legacy by George Jim James. And talking a little bit about Imhotep and, you know, the first man, things of nature. So can you give me a little background? Because the reality is a lot of the history that you're talking about, we don't necessarily get in our regular history books.
No, you don't. You know, I mean, and that song was pretty much about our culture and the things that we have accomplished, and that's a part of our lineage. But, you know, it's really a matter of doing the research, man, reading a lot of books, researching, going online, having the motivation to learn about this type of information through having different arguments with friends of mine, starting from an early age, you know, I grew up in a type of community, you can go out on the block and just see an argument between a bunch of brothers, half of them Christians, half of them Muslims, you know, half of them got this political view, the other half got that political view, you know, all of them gangsters, you know.
Right, right, good old days, right, yeah.
You know, if you're a part of the community, then these are the types of conversations that go on, you know what I mean, in particular circles. You know, the gods is arguing to the 5%ers, you know what I mean, all of that
right.
types of jazz.
Right, right.
So it was just a matter of wanting to know more, you know what I mean, wanting to dig deeper. And eventually having that sheet grow into finding out different informations, finding out different, you know, different interesting facts that you really just want to put out there and let everybody absorb them.
So tell the listening audience, because this will be available through podcasts, and I'm going to be pushing it out to a lot of different sources. But I want them to be able to know a couple of things. One, how to contact you for more information, and then two, how to get your music.
Okay. You can contact us directly at smarthiphopmusic@gmail.com. The website where you can learn a lot about things that we're doing is smarthiphopmusic.blogspot.com. The album is available on Amazon, iTunes, Napster, CD Baby, you know, all your major digital distributors. Just put in Lesson 1, Hip Hop and Education, or you can look for me, Lock. You spell that L-A-K. And you will definitely find it on there.
So what about Twitter? You on Facebook or Twitter? Can
oh,
you go out
yes.
to your Facebook and Twitter pages?
Yes, yes. On Twitter, we're on Smart Hip Hop. On Facebook, it's Smart Music Entertainment. And we have a YouTube channel, Smart Hip Hop Music, where we have videos up there. And those are the videos that we actually perform, that I perform when I'm doing my workshops. I usually have those videos playing in the background as I rap them to the students that I'm talking to.
Awesome, awesome. So I noticed in your bio you talked a little bit about the CBS radio. How did you land that particular interview, and has it been able to catapult you to other audiences?
Well, you know, we landed that. Kenya, who is once again the CMO of Smart Music Entertainment, she's pretty much a marketing genius. And, you know, she was able to land that CBS radio spot for us. And, you know, it has helped, but everything is important. You know, every interview is important. Everything that we do and that has allowed us to share our music and that has allowed us to, you know, spread the message and give Smart Music Entertainment a platform to talk from has been a very, very important piece, because you never know who's listening. You know, this is not, you know, it wasn't immediately a mainstream thing. So having outlets where people could listen to us and find out more about us and, you know, just hear the music that we're putting out, everything has been important. You know, the CBS radio, this radio, everything has been, you know, important. Everything has played a part in the direction that we're going.
You know, what I like most is being able to have this intimate conversation with you so the listening audience can just know the man behind the music or the entity behind the music. Because a lot of times, you know, we hear the songs and we see the music, we see the videos, but we don't get a chance to know the person. And just this experience for me has enlightened me a lot more than just listening to your music. It allowed me to understand the true work, the true interest that you have into your work. It's not just a matter of a money-making vehicle, but it's something that you're passionate about. It's something that you have a mission about. And so I really, again, has grown from this experience in your music and will definitely be sharing this with all of my peers in the community.
So what's
next for you?
Well, right now, we're shifting gears from the workshops and after-school programs and things like that where we've been speaking to performing at a lot of different venues and actually going into different spots and just performing the music and, you know, letting the people hear us and letting the people see us actually performing. And then, you know, we're currently working on Lesson 2, you know, and going to try to have that ready within the next couple months. And that is what we're extremely focused on at the moment. You know, there's a couple of different hands. A couple of different pots I have my hand in. But right now, the main focus is performing these shows and letting people see and hear how we get down, and also making sure that lesson two is official.
So when you mention the workshops and the after school programs, kind of elaborate a little bit more on that. So what schools have you been into? Which age groups are you involved in? And kind of what's the message you take to them?
I mean, we've been through schools throughout the tri-state. There's only a couple I could name because being the company that we are, parents don't want you to use their kids as, like, promotional tools and things like that. So I've agreed to not mention. I'll just, you know, work the deal out with whoever I have to work the deal out with and then show up at that particular school. But careful not to, you know, make anybody's mom or dad upset.
Right. Understand.
Doing. But, you know, we've been in Philly, you know, New York, Jersey, Connecticut. You know, we just go around, and it's an hour-long workshop. I perform 5 songs with the videos behind me. Then we'll just have a discussion about the information in those songs, and then we'll switch gears and talk about the importance of education and why it's important and how education and paying attention while they're in high school, how that will directly translate into financial stability when they become an adult. And, you know, that's the most important piece of what we do, just bridging the gap, letting them know that it's very real. This is information that you need, not something that you should take for granted. And that in order for you to, you know, be a very constructive member of society once you become an adult, you're going to need these tools now. So that's pretty much what we do.
So when you what are the demographics in the classroom? Is it predominantly African Americans, or is it a mixed crowd? Is it, you know, kind of a mix of Latinos and, you know, Asians? What's the demographics?
It started out just being in predominantly African American hoods. You know what I mean? My thing was I wanted to go into the communities that I kind of grow up in, because I feel like, you know, they get treated the least. So, but, you know, we started this in October, and I say from October to now, everything has grown from being in an all black, you know, to being in a mixed type of environment, then to being in an Asian, you know what I mean, environment.
Right.
A crazy experience. And, you know, that's pretty, and Latino. You know, I haven't been in a predominantly all-white school system yet. Has been invited, so, you know, we're still working things out, but that's most recent. But, and the ages range from pretty much, you know, third grade to high school. Third grade and up. And it's usually we try to get them from the 6th grade to the 10th or 11th grade.
Wow.
So that's where we like to work at. But it's been from the 3rd all the way to the 12th.
Have you been able to measure your impact on any of the kids? You know, have they changed, or have they been contacting you, or have they asked for mentorship, anything along those lines?
No, I haven't. You know, we're trying to gather all that information now just from the different guidance counselors and the people that I've asked to give out the albums to and get feedback from. You know, I mean, I've personally been told about how people love the music, you know, the kids. And that they really like the album, and, you know, there's been write-ups and, you know, people will contact me on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, but we're still trying to compile that data. But at the end, you can tell if they like it or not. You know what I mean? They're
going to
stick around when it's over and want to talk to you and you know, get another CD or take a picture or want to battle me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I've been
getting battles out there, okay.
Yeah, they actually want to battle me. So, you know what I mean? It's been good experiences, man. You know, we have not had any negative experiences thus far. And I'm talking about from walking into a place and being booed in the beginning to performing the music and then having the dialogue and then having everything be all good at the end.
Wow.
So it's been quite the process.
That's cool. And so you talked about what's next and performing Anything we could, any insight to any upcoming shows?
I know I'm going to be in, there's a show in Newark on April 22nd. I can't even say much about it because
okay.
I'm on fire and everything, but I've just agreed to do the show, but I can't, I haven't gotten all my contacts and stuff like that, but that's pretty much going to be the first. And then after that, man, we're just going to go all over the country and perform, and wherever we're invited and whatever we can politic, you know, we're gonna get this music out there. And this is we're right at the beginning stages of putting everything together and building the contacts and putting a bigger show together. So that's the focus now.
Awesome. So tell our audience again on where they can get your music, how they can get in contact with you, how they can find where you're going to be performing at, all of those good things.
Definitely. All of the information will be on smarthiphopmusic.blogspot.com. All of where we're performing, where we're going to be. You can find out, you know, more about the staff members, everything. That's on smarthiphopmusic.blogspot.com. You can email us directly at smarthiphopmusic@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at smarthiphop, Facebook at Smart Music Entertainment. The YouTube channel is Smart Hip Hop Music. The album is available right now on Amazon, iTunes, Napster, CD Baby, all your major digital distributors. Lesson 1, Hip Hop and Education. The name is Lock, L-A-K. And once again, the website is smarthiphopmusic.blogspot.com.
That is awesome. All right, we'll closing up on the end of our show. Lock, I want to give you some final comments.
Just be positive, man. I want people out there to know that education is the key, and I'm not necessarily talking about college education. It could be college 4 years, 2 years. It could be getting a GED. It could be an internship program. It could be a certificate program. Anything that involves continuous learning is the message of that Smart Music Entertainment is trying to put out there. And I just wanted to be clear on that because everybody's like, do you just mean going to college? No. Continuously learning, just picking up a book or your iPad or whatever it is and soaking up more information that can help you as a person.
That is awesome. All right, well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank to all my listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We're going to end with Locke music. And so, again, Locke, we appreciate you stopping by Current Events with Patrick Cook. We wish you much success. And now we're going to expect you to come back here sometime next year and tell us about all the great things you're doing. All right?
Will do. Oh, when I get lesson 2 out, you know, I'll definitely come at you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Appreciate it.
Really happy. This is slavery, the history to put it in you. The spot with the I see this is crazy, which means they forced the slave women to go produce babies. Slipped the slaves out and ran away, they wouldn't panic, cause they can get more without selling ships across the Atlantic. They had no rights, no nothing, that was evident. We know them hands that pick cotton can't pick the president. And they was daydreaming of up north life, sweating in them cotton fields the size of the turnpike. The slaves were tortured, and millions didn't make it. And this went on for hundreds of years before they were emancipated. Smashed them out their homes and forced them into a new country. Slaves had to live making the millions while the Africans hungry. Slaves do or die and kill them with no compassion. Roots is definitely true, and I'm a starving happy. Smashed them out their homes and forced them into a new country. Slaves had to live making the millions while the Africans hungry. Slaves do or die and kill them with no compassion. Roots is definitely true, and I'm a starving happy.
And put us in chains across the middle passage. Separated our fam, had us calling them masses. Raped our women, treat our grown men like little kids. Why you say your man is your boy and you in a crib? Made it illegal to read and hear plain truth. Had us hanging from trees like we were strange fruit. Sent the mob out whenever we show progress. Burned down the Black Wall Street and murdered our kids. Three-fifths man is how they would describe us. Slaves made no wages, how they deprived us. Robbed us, confining us to ghettos and the projects. Put us in the back, but now gotta acknowledge us. We coming up like weeds on an urban lawn. Hip hop is mainstream, so you know it's on. The first, the last shall be relevant. And what's realer than the first Black president?
They smashed them out their homes and forced them into a new country. Slaves had to live making the millions while the Africans hungry. Slaves do or die and kill them with no compassion. Roots is definitely true, and I'm a starving happy. They smashed them out their homes and forced them into a new country. Slaves had to live making the millions while the Africans hungry. Slaves do or die and kill them with no compassion. Roots is definitely true, and I'm a starving happy. This is slavery.